Thanks for joining this important session as we discuss the strategies, tips, and tricks for landing your first job here in the profession or moving up to the next one in your athletic communications journey. And we welcome any questions at any time, so just place them in the Q&A function of the Zoom. You can use the chat to comment, but please place all your questions in the Q&A channel. That's how we'll kind of filter in throughout our call today. My name is Colin Terrell. I'm the Director of Sports Information and Promotions at the University of Chicago, and I will serve as the moderator for today's webcast. As a reminder, we are recording this webinar, and later you can view it on the CSC website and YouTube page. You can watch it on demand sessions anytime that you would like. We also offer it on numerous different podcast channels, so check that out if you're a Spotify or Apple user, if that's your preferred method of getting that kind of stuff. Please invite your current CSC colleagues to listen and watch this too. It's informational. It's just not for the new and younger professionals in the athletic communications field. We got a lot to cover, so let's get started. Again, we appreciate you joining the day, and remember to send your questions in. We have an awesome panelist group today. First is Cole Hellman from Palm Beach University, and Atlantic University. He is the Director of Athletic Communications there. Thanks for joining us, Cole.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Next up, we have Shelby Hill. She was formerly with Baylor, but now is the Assistant Commissioner for Communications of the Missouri Valley Conference. Hi, Shelby. Thanks for joining us.
Hi. Excited to be here.
And last but certainly not least is Meredith Mahoney. She is from Illinois Wesleyan and is the Athletic Communications Graduate Assistant. Thanks for joining us, Meredith.
Glad to be here. Thank you.
So I feel like this is a very important topic for the time of year that we're at. And it's, you know, starting the journey, the tips and tricks of getting into the field and landing the job. A lot of job opportunities are posting, graduate assistantships, assistants, you know, even full-time, you know, head of shop kind of positions. So that's what we really want to talk about today, is kind of prepare everyone that might be looking, or maybe not looking this year, but thinking about next year, a couple of years down the road. I feel like these tools that we're going to present to everyone are going to be useful no matter when you decide to get into the job market. So I guess we'll start at the very beginning, and, you know, that's what to look for when you're looking. So I'll go around, you know, just if anyone wants to pick up this question, I'll ask all three of you, you know, how do you start the search? You know, what job boards are you looking at, and what maybe should your resume look like?
So for me, you know, shameless plug, obviously when it comes to job boards, I think we all know about the CSC job board, and the NCAA marketplace. There's also, I guess, call it the other CSC, Collegiate Sports Connect. It seems one that's growing, as well, and has, you know, all levels of, college athletics, jobs in all kinds of different fields. And, you know, for me, I think just doing your research on where you want to go, what kind of job you're looking for, where do you want to start, what level, you know, I think those are all things to consider when trying to decide where you want to apply.
I think for me, the older I've gotten, it's really been, I've been making less decisions based on my career and more on my family. So I would say something that's really important is to write down your values and what they are, what's important to you, kind of like Cole said, whether it's regional location, whether it's work responsibility, title and money aren't always everything. So I would encourage you to keep that in mind as you are looking for a job, but definitely just keep in mind the stage of life you're in. And if you've never lived really far from home, when I first started in this industry, I was 6 hours from home and was very homesick. And then I've moved as far as 14 and a half hours and been fine. So definitely just keep that in mind as you are looking at different job postings.
Yeah, I'm very similar in a lot of location. And I just knew that when I was looking at, I knew the probably the best part for me would be the grad assistant. I wanted my master's. And so it was something that I valued, and I valued my education in that part and where I ended up going. And I looked through college sport communicators for that. And before that, I'd done a little bit of research on Teamwork Online. It's got all the professional jobs and NCAA jobs as well, dabble in there a bit, but those are more of the administrative roles. And so another one is, I've seen a lot come up on Twitter lately of different universities posting different positions. And I think that just values to kind of keep your eyes open and know where you are, know locationally where you want to be and kind of that role that you're looking for.
Yeah, I'll echo the location sentiment that pretty much everyone brought up. And I feel like me and you, Shelby, are kind of the same. We've both found our way back to the Midwest. But my first job, I was out in Montana, so I was 22 hours away from home, and it was quite the shock. It was worth it getting the career started. But as I, you know, got older, as I had my first kid, like getting close to family was the perfect excuse to find a new job. And as long as it kind of furthered the career path. But yeah, location, you can't beat it when you're around the people that you really want to be around. Or maybe just if you're an outdoors person and you want to do mountains, or if you want to, you know, surf the Pacific Ocean, stuff like that, that's something that can always be factored in. But when looking at, you know, your resume specifically, you know, how many pages do you want it? You know, how do you want to highlight the skills that maybe you really want to feature? And really, should every resume be a little bit different? Should you tailor it to the job, or should you just kind of have a standard one that just shows what you are truly good at and what skills you could offer a professional employee?
I can start off with this. So I'm chair of the job seekers committee that is now career services. Anyway, and for a while during COVID, we were helping people with resume review. So to answer your first question, your resume should be one page, not front and back, just one. But I like the idea of having a master resume. So I don't remember everything I've done, every stop I've had. So my master resume is 2.5 pages probably, but that includes different events I volunteered at, different NCAA championships that I've gotten to work at, education, obviously, and then every different stop I've had, but that's not the copy that everybody gets. So we've kind of talked about that, tailoring your resume to the job that you're interested in. I know Meredith has talked about this before, so I'll let her kind of take that part of it, but definitely have a master copy. It can be as long as you want it to be, but when submitting a resume, make sure it's one page and your name is clear. And I could tell you, people probably don't really care about your address, maybe just what city and state you're in.
And I will add on there, make sure it's an email that, you know, you check often. I remember making a mistake when I was applying for jobs as an undergrad student that I had my personal email on there, and I don't check that one much as I check my school email. And so I'd gotten some stuff sent there that I'd missed beyond that dateline. But yeah, I'm kind of newer to it, so my resume is not as long. And so it's a lot of just tailoring it to where I want to be, or maybe places I'm looking at, keeping updating my grad programs on there, making sure classes are listed or some way that I kind of know what's relevant now and where I'm looking at. Some jobs are different than others. Some schools have different sports than others. So if you have experience knowing in a sport that is not as common, I know now I have lacrosse on my resume and that wasn't something I had before, but that would be something I'd put on there now if I was applying to a school that had lacrosse and maybe that's newer to them. Having those newer sports on there, I know women's bowling is another one that our first year grad assistant might be able to use to her advantage by putting on there because you get to use sports like that, but trying to tailor it so that it sticks out to other colleges as well, so that you stand on top of that resume pool.
I think another just important concept is just, you know, attention to detail, making obviously sure everything, you know, looks good and is accurate and is not, you know, filled with typos and everything like that. Because, you know, that is your first impression, you know, that people often get of you is your resume, if they don't already know you. And then I think it also is good, you know, if you want to stress like that graphic design experience or anything like that. Like, I'm not saying to put it on your, like, I don't need a wild resume, but like link your portfolio, I think is very important. You can use a site like Behance, or if you have your own website, like I think a link to that is very important as well.
So Shelby, you brought up the, you know, master resume, which is a great idea that I honestly hadn't even thought of. And we got a question in the Q&A and they're asking, you know, do you think a master copy resume should be a paper one or should be an online version like LinkedIn? Or should you maybe tailor your LinkedIn to more of the resume that you would put out into the public to, for applying for actual jobs?
Yeah, that's a really great question. I'm really bad about using LinkedIn. I wish I was better. So I would advise you to make sure your LinkedIn is up to date. And so that can serve as your master resume. Honestly, it's just how you're going to remember I'm a very, I like hard copies of things. I know that's not great for the environment. So I'm working on, you know, changing to all digital, but I know I've had several instances where I've created a resume and then I go to find the file and I can't find it anymore. So it's totally up to you how you kind of want to keep track of it. But LinkedIn is definitely a great option for that.
Someone asked, we brought up location, you know, and someone asked, is it problematic limiting where you apply and does your current location matter? You know, Cole, Meredith, when you guys were looking, is that something that you guys kind of took into consideration? Maybe that you were already based in the Midwest and you wanted to find your way there because moving is expensive, or, you know, was it something that you just didn't let yourself get into a square box because you were looking for as many opportunities as you possibly could open up yourself to?
I think it depends on what you want. You know, if you're open to moving far away, then, you know, I don't think you should limit yourself in what you apply. But like, for me, for example, at the time, I didn't want to leave the East Coast. So I didn't really apply to places that were away from the East Coast. I think that's perfectly acceptable. You know, I wanted to be, you know, at least a drive away, a one day drive for my family. That's what I wanted. So that was the parameter I kind of set for myself. And I don't think there's any problem with that whatsoever. I think in this industry, current location doesn't really matter. I think if you're applying, like, I don't think anyone's going to like be wary of, oh, this person's over here, I'm not even going to consider them. Like, I think moving, you know, far distances is a norm in the industry. So I wouldn't be too concerned about that. But I just think it, like you said, it just comes down to kind of what you want and what your goals are and what's a good fit for you.
Yeah, I feel like for me, I did my undergrad 4.5 hours away from home, and I kind of knew that I wanted to be a little bit closer the next 2 years, especially as a grad assistant, kind of figuring out really living on my own without actually like being super far away from home. And I don't think I'm really looking at location wise for my future, but I always feel like I'm just going to end up where my best fit feels. And if that's on the East Coast, it's on the East Coast. If it's West Coast, it's on the West Coast. If it's in my backyard, it's in my backyard. And to me, I just feel like the perfect fit's the perfect fit. And wherever that takes me, I'm not opposed to really going anywhere.
Awesome. So yeah, let's move on a little bit. And we talked about obviously the resume and kind of the beginning stages of looking for jobs and job openings, but how do you really highlight or feature yourself to make you stand out when you get a chance to be able to do so? But how can you prepare yourself too for that first stage? You know, Meredith, you mentioned something about featuring sports that might not be the quote unquote premier sports or the flashy sports like basketball and football, especially at the Division I level. But, you know, how do you get experience in those sports? How do you make sure that when you do get experience in those sports that you're actually learning everything that you can, especially when it may be something that's completely foreign to you to begin with, that you've never had experience maybe for women's lacrosse or field hockey or something like that?
It's a lot of just advocating for yourself and just believing that you can do it and you can learn it. And I remember when I was interviewing for my grad assistant position, the head women's lacrosse coach at the time asked me on my interview if I had experience with lacrosse and what I would do if I had her as a contact, as a sport. And I looked at her and I said, I don't know anything about lacrosse, but if you're my sport, I promise you that by the time your season comes around, I'll be ready to cover you, and I will do whatever it takes to make sure that I am prepared. And I think just having that open mindset and just being willing to learn is what's going to take you far away. And I mean, I also work with tennis, and I really had no idea about tennis. And I just sat down with the coaches and I said, can you just explain how things work and how sets work and how what I should be looking for and what's good highlights? And I feel like that's not only built my capability of working with those sports and my confidence working with those sports, but it's also built the relationships with the coaches that could go a long way. If those coaches leave and go somewhere else, that might vouch for you down the line.
I'd just really like to add on to what Meredith said. Everybody, you can't be afraid of failure. I think as SIDs, we put a lot of pressure on ourselves to be successful, to not mess up, to know everything. But Meredith brings up a really good point. Even if it's a popular sport that you feel like you should know, still talk to the coach. I think you learn a lot about their vision for their program. You learn a lot about the sport, and it's okay to admit you don't know everything. I think what will be a detriment to you is if you claim to know everything and then they hire you for this skill set and then you show up the first day and have no idea what's going on. There was a student worker at a place that I used to be at, and I remember she had worked a softball game, and the very first game she sits down to do the scoreboard for me. And she has no idea the difference between a ball and a strike. She said, how am I going to know? By the end of the season, she knew it with her eyes closed if she had to. Had another student, had never been around softball before, and was asked to keep the scorebook. But that's how he learned how to input stats into StatCruise, because he asked how and he asked questions. And even though we all thought it was silly at times, he really picked it up quickly that way. So definitely when you're given the opportunity, like Meredith said, don't shy away, ask the questions, and don't be afraid to fail.
Cole, what's the benefit of being a jack of all trades? Obviously, depending on what level you're at, what kind of school you go to, as far as the support that they have, do they have creative services that handles content like that? You know, are you in charge of keeping stats during game days, or do they have an outside service, or maybe some volunteers that cover that aspect of the job? You know, jack of all trades is something that's important, because you never know what you're going to be asked to tackle, you know, at your next stop, or even at your current stop. You know, it's always others' duties as assigned. So how important is that when it's really coming to shaping your experience and moving forward in the job field?
Sure. I always say it keeps the job interesting, doing something different just about every day. So I think it's really important, like we've kind of talked about, just learning as many skills as possible and being willing to learn as many different things as possible. Like, I don't expect my graduate assistants to come in and know everything. Definitely not. I just expect them to try and work hard. And I just say the more things you can learn, the more valuable you are to me. Because at this level, we are the stats person, but we're also the content creators, we're the videographers, the, you know, webmasters, the writers, you know, everything. So we have to kind of have a hand in all of it. So the more you can kind of showcase that you have, you know, that some of those skills, or even that you're just willing to learn them, I think is great. And that's what's going to be valuable to me, like if I'm looking for a grad assistant or looking for an assistant position.
So I had a couple more questions pop up in the Q&A. Remember, you can always drop those at any time during our call. We can filter through those and get them to them as they kind of come up and become topical. But someone's asking, you know, we're talking about getting experience, and someone asked, you know, what advice would you give to undergraduate students who haven't had the ability to branch out for a lot of different experiences, such as internship opportunities? They're worried they've been stuck in the same position and worry about resume won't be appealing to employees. Shelby, you want to start off with that?
Yeah. I mean, I feel like we see it all the time. I'm not sure if you're a student athlete who asked this question, but I feel like this happens to student athletes a lot. Again, I think when an opportunity arises, even if it is free work, sign up. And there might be different perks. Like I'll tell you, I've been in the business now for almost 10 years. And the women's basketball Final Four in Dallas last year, I went and worked it. Didn't get paid for it, but I got a hotel and I got fed. Like, again, getting yourself out there when you can, even if it's unpaid and it's volunteer, it doesn't matter what stage of your career you're in. It's just another way to network. And so, if you're worried that you might only have one or two things on your resume, be really good at those one or two things. I think being able to explain what you do, how valuable you are to an organization, that says a lot. And it also kind of shows your commitment in a way, because maybe you haven't had the time, but if you're committed to where you're at, that to me speaks volumes of the type of worker you are. So don't be discouraged by that. I think embrace that, and just be ready to explain how you've made a difference and made an impact.
Yeah, I'll echo what Shelby said. I had the same experience instead of the 2015 Men's Final Four and working Horizon League Championships and doing kind of like the labor work of it, trying to get it ready for ESPN, you know, championship Saturdays during March Madness time. But you know, being thrown in situations when you're asked to work one of those events, sometimes you're given jobs that you've never done before. I was never a quotes runner, and I ended up in Duke's locker room after they won the national championship asking quotes of Grayson Allen. And that's not only is that the coolest experience that one can imagine kind of growing up and wanting to work in sports, but it also allows you, like Shelby said, to network with people, to ask questions, to see what kind of experience they have. Just having other people to bounce ideas off of or go to for advice or just kind of say hi and see where they've come from and what their journey has been, I think can be invaluable. I know, Meredith, you kind of had that same kind of experience this past March with working the first four out in Dayton. Can you kind of talk about a little bit about that and what that, how that was valuable to you?
Yeah, of course. So my boss is really good at what she does, and she's really passionate about making sure that professional development is at the top of her list, and not only at the top of her list for herself, but it's for everybody from our full-time assistant down to our freshman student workers. And she's, I'm fortunate enough that she has a large network that she's built because she's put in the time and the effort to do so. And she had connections at Dayton and reached out and was like, hey, we have a couple of days off during the first four, and I have some people that would love to volunteer, and we could come out and just help, and you could throw us wherever. And I have no experience working at the Division I level. I went to a Division III school. I work at a Division III school now, and I just embraced it. And whatever they needed me to do, I did. And just kind of like how Colin said, like I just held the mic at press conferences, and I passed around the mic at press conferences, and I ran stats, and I just immersed myself in the experience, and I just wanted to make sure that, you know, I got to experience that, and also that I made a good name for myself, and I made a good name for the university I'm at. And I think that down the road, that I'm hoping that that would help me in the future. And not only if it doesn't help me, but it showed me what goes on at levels like that. And that's something that, you know, if that's what I'm passionate about, I know kind of what it takes to work at an event like that. And I mean, just for no pay. And I got, like, kind of like Shelby, I got fed and I got a hotel, and I had a cool experience, and I love basketball. So there's, you know, to me, it didn't really feel like volunteer work. I was getting paid enough by just being able to watch it.
Cole, anything to add before we move on?
You know, they kind of touched on it a little bit, but volunteering and like taking those extra opportunities, like it's not only like, you know, hopefully it makes a connection that maybe can help you land a job with wherever you're working. But that also, you know, could just be a reference for you moving forward. You can never have too many people that are willing to put in a good word for you, right? It's never a bad thing. So that's really all I had to add there.
We have even had someone in the chat say volunteer. So it's very true. There's always opportunities opening up around the big events, even the small events. No volunteer opportunity goes wasted, in my opinion. So so we get to the interview part. Your resume submitted. You've already found the job that you want to apply for. So you've gotten to that part. What do you do? That can be a little scary time for a lot of people, especially if it's their first interview or if they haven't gone through an interview, you know, in the past 5 years or something like that. It's always new experience. And even if you've done interviews recently, it's still kind of nerve wracking throwing yourself out there and trying to prove your worth to an organization that you want to work for. What do you do? Do you ask questions? Do you ask, are there some questions you don't ask? What kind of Zoom lighting to do? I'll start with Cole on this one. What are some of the tips and tricks you can give to somebody during an interview as they're trying to show somebody what they're worth?
Well, in terms of lighting, don't have a motion light that you can't turn back on from across the room. So in terms of, you know, getting ready for the interview, obviously you want to present yourself the part, you know, be on time, be professional. You know, I can't tell you how many interviews I had where the person wore a hoodie or something. We can't have that. You know, you want to be perceived a certain way. Then you have to act and present yourself in a certain way. And then really the biggest thing for me, if you're preparing for an interview or getting ready to interview, is just to, I know we talked about doing research in terms of location, but, you know, research that job as much as you can, research that office, kind of see what their structure looks like, see, you know, if you can kind of get an idea of what you'd be doing, what sports you'd be covering, I think is all key. Have names of the people that you're going to be talking with and remember them and follow up with them after the fact, I think is very important. And then really the last thing for me, I know we've talked on about location a ton, but you know, once you're really in that mix where you're getting interviews and everything, I think that's where it's important to start looking about like housing, like, is this area right for me? Can I afford to live here? Which is, you know, no shame in that whatsoever. West Palm Beach, insanely nice, but also an insanely expensive place to live. Like, as someone who hires grad assistants to try to come here, like, I get it. It's not for everyone. Not everyone can make it work. There's no hard feelings from that at all. I just think it's good to have a good idea about that before you kind of really get yourself into that process.
Shelby, how important is, you know, salary is not necessarily a topic you want to bring up in your first interview. Maybe it's when you get into the final round, but I think it's not too early or never too early to kind of ask what the benefits are of a job. As you get older, those insurance and the 403B, when you're fresh out of college, might not seem important, but as you get a little bit older, those definitely are big things. You know, I think a lot of colleges around the country offer pretty good health insurance and 403B, but that's something to definitely consider as you age out of your parents' health insurance and you have to start paying your own kind of bills and everything like that.
Yeah. So I would say, So benefits include health, right? But also benefits can include a lot of other things. If they're paying into your retirement, as someone who's now getting older into the business, and I thought, oh, I don't need retirement. You need retirement. Also consider gear. Like, do you get gear from a place? Do they cover professional development? That's a benefit. Anything you don't have to pay for, are they supplementing meals? If you're looking for a graduate assistant position, are they providing housing? Your stipend might not be very big, but if they're providing housing, I can tell you right now, in today's market, I would love for somebody to provide my housing for me. And so benefits can look different everywhere. I think a lot of it, if it's a place that really wants you, they're going to sell you on the benefits. So they should be talking about it already. But kind of what Colin said, please do not ask about salary when at the end of the first interview they say, do you have any questions for us? Do not ask how much it pays. It will come up. Obviously, it is a concern to a lot of us as we're looking for different positions. Hopefully, they're a organization that will post a salary range because nobody wants to waste anybody's time. But just be mindful of appropriate times to ask certain questions. There was a question in the chat that talked about when it comes to interviews and when it's time for applicants to ask questions, what are examples of questions that should be asked? I always ask, what is your favorite part about your job? I know that's kind of weird because they're interviewing you, but this is just like a personal preference. If the first thing they bring up is money or location, it's a horrible place to work. They should be talking about the culture, the head coaches they work with, the way the community embraces the school and the school embraces the community. Those are all things that speak to the volume of the institution or the organization. If they say, oh, I make a lot of money and we're in the heart of a major city. Yeah, they probably hate their job and they love their social life. So just keep those things in mind. I don't know if Cole or Meredith have any other types of questions to ask, but those are my most important ones.
Yeah, Meredith, do you have any favorite questions? We got a lot of great questions in the chat, but I'll ask you this first before we hop to some of our questions that are being asked of us.
Yeah, I stress the professional development question. I kind of just ask, what do they do for professional development and what does that look like? I just think that especially in our industry, a lot of networking can go a long ways. And my boss kind of just harped the professional development. I didn't really think about that when I was an undergrad, but she kind of put it in my mind that that is something that I should look for when I go elsewhere. And it's a lot of times it's not just about like progressing your career, but like you want to be better there. And even just going to convention, if that's what they provide, whether it's every year, every other year, that's networking opportunities for you. That's opportunities for you to grow as a person. That might mean you meet somebody that can help you down the line, but it also could progress your career in the near future. And that's just something that I've always valued. I know a good question to ask a lot of interviews is like three characteristics about yourself. And I think that I always kind of look at, where do you see like what are three characteristics about this university that you like, or about the athletic department? And then I kind of asked like what the plan is for athletics and where they see it going in the near 3 to 5 or 5 to 10 years.
Awesome. So a question that popped up, you know, is timely right now, is that when it comes to that time for you to ask them questions, do we have any suggestions as far as transition sentences to use, or do we just kind of go from question to question? Myself, you know, I always like to ask questions of specific people on the chat, especially if it's a group chat in Zoom or in person, and always kind of thank them for it, you know, maybe reiterate what they're asking of me in a different way, just so they kind of know that I understand what they were asking of me. But just making sure that you acknowledge them. And that way you kind of building that rapport a little bit, and it shows some respect. But is there any transitional statements you guys have used in interviews where it kind of allows you to flow rather than having to just be a little bit choppy?
Yeah, I feel like for me, create a dialogue when they answer. Because you're going to have your list of questions written out. I don't recommend keeping them all in your head because you'll forget some things. Obviously, don't have them on your phone where you're like reading either. But if you have like a little sheet of paper next to your computer, if it's a Zoom, or it's perfectly fine to have a small portfolio if you're on campus. But don't ask all your questions at once. If you know you have 5 or 6, come prepared, because they will probably address 1 or 2 of your questions. But if you have 5 to 6 questions, just ask a couple. So it doesn't feel like you're rattling off a bunch of questions back to back to back. But for the first round of interviews, let's say, pick your top 2 most important questions, maybe have a third in case one of those 2 gets answered, but have a dialogue about that question. And honestly, when somebody says, "Do you have any questions for us?" Yeah, I have a couple. Start with the first, create some dialogue, and then say, "My last question that I really have that's on my mind right now is this." And then you can end the conversation. People typically, if they're interviewing you, will say, you know, if you have anything you want to follow up with, you can shoot us an email, you can give us a call. So there will be a natural way to continue to address questions.
Cool. Meredith, anything to add on that one?
And I would kind of say, like, I think what Joby said is spot on with creating a dialogue. The best interviews that I've had, either as the interviewer or the interviewee, have been closer to conversations than they have been, you know, just straight questions and answers. So I think that's extremely helpful. It just kind of creates a comfortability for both parties, I think. And then also, like, this is probably a little tricky, but I think even if you can find like a natural way to, if they ask you a question and you're on kind of a topical thing that pertains to something that you had prepared to ask later, I don't think there's any harm if you can naturally slide it in. I mean, obviously don't force anything, but I think, you know, it kind of comes back to me of trying to make it more like a conversation. If you can slide something in there and kind of get a question you know, answered sort of ahead of time or covered ahead of time, that way at the end you're not just rattling off a list, I think that would be helpful.
Yeah, and I would say make sure you have some questions. Don't, when they ask, don't hesitate, and also don't just not have any. It makes you kind of look a little unprepared. And this goes back on what Cole was saying earlier, do your research and, you know, look at who you're meeting with, look at who you're interviewing with, kind of find some, I always try to find some common ground and how I can just show them that almost like I did my research and this is something I'm interested in and I put the time and effort into do it. But also like, this is a question I have and this is kind of how your background might be able to answer this question. And don't be afraid to, if you know who you're meeting with, don't be afraid to have questions specific to them.
I was just gonna say one more thing to follow up with that. If somebody says, "Do you have any questions?" and you say, "Nope, all good," chances are they think you don't care. And so understand, no question is a dumb question. However, don't ask a question that's already been answered. Kind of like Cole said, if it's natural conversation and it's coming up, ask the question as it occurs, because it creates that natural dialogue and it's not so much the interviewer asking the interviewee all the questions all the time. But yeah, there's nothing worse than not having a question because it seems like you're disinterested. But also kind of like we've all said, just don't, I guess, ramble questions off, because it could come across that you're not even prepared. So yeah, that's all I wanted to add.
You took the words right out of my mouth, Shelby. I was going to say, like, it just makes you seem completely disinterested in the position, that you haven't done your research, that you really don't want what they're offering, and that there's no way that you don't have a single question based on what has been talked about or in your research at the university, or what sports, you know, you're going to be covering. There's always something to ask a question. So make sure you at least have a few to ready to go. They, again, they might be answered during the course of the interview, but always make sure that you have a few just ready to keep the conversation going at towards the end. We talked about benefits a little bit, and I know Meredith mentioned ability to go to conferences and being able to network there. And so what kind of network opportunities are there available at CSE or School of Sparks, someone asked in the chat. And I know from my time being at CSE, especially last year in Orlando, I got to meet a lot of people that I had met face-to-face, to have those conversations, to bounce ideas off of, to really kind of take in those panels and webinar and ceremonies with, you know, the Hall of Fame members and everything like that. Even the NACTA, you know, chat that we're allowed to go into as well. It's just such a beneficial thing. But how big of that to you guys is having your place not only allow you to go to CSE and other conventions, but actively support you doing so?
Well, that's how I met Cole. So kind of a plug for the Career Services Committee. When I first got into this business, I joined a committee. So it was Job Seekers at the time. It was in 2015. I had no idea. I knew nobody in the business. I didn't know what the Job Seekers Committee did. But that was my way to get to network. And so even if it's not going to convention, so say your employer can't afford it, your GA, your undergrad, you're not invited through your employer, join a committee if you've got a membership. I think that's been so much fun. Also, it's called X now, but back in the day it was Twitter, and that's how I've met some of my best friends. Like I kid you not, that's how I've met a lot of people in this business. And so it's been really cool to kind of, if something that a bunch of the people I follow, like, right, it pops up on my feed and I'm like, oh, this is cool. Or, oh, I know this name, or I know this person. So now then I start following them. And then when you're at convention, it's kind of a cool thing to be like, hey, I know we've followed each other on Twitter for 5 years in the least creepy way, but it's so good to meet you. And so I think there's just multiple ways. It's not always just at convention. There's ways of doing it. It's participating in webinars like this, following people that you look up to in the profession, people you don't know, people you do know. But for me, it's a lot of kind of branching out, but joining committees, we have a lot available to join if you are a CSC member. And I know we would all love committee help. But those are just some ways to get to know people and network, especially if your network's really, really, really small.
Yeah, I would say especially like the membership can really be, you know, it is what you make of it, right? It's going to take a little effort, but if you put some effort in and you really want to meet people and learn some more things, like there's so many opportunities to do so. Shelby said, I had never been on a committee or anything, just happened to reach out to someone I knew that was on it via email. I was like, hey, what's this about? Like, what do you do? How can I be involved? And it's like one of my favorite things I've done probably as like a young professional is being on a committee, because it kind of opened my whole like world up, got me out of like the bubble of only knowing the SIDs that are just in my conference or, you know, in my department. So I highly recommend that. I think Shelby also hit it again with you know, kind of social media. I feel like that's like a interesting like aspect of like this industry, is that's like such a normalized thing compared to probably some other fields. But yeah, I think Meredith and I even connected that way before we even got on this panel together. So I think just adding a little bit to what Shelby said, she mostly hit most of it.
Yeah, I the Twitter one's an interesting one, especially in our field. A lot of people meet on LinkedIn or like connect through LinkedIn, and I do think that's a really good point that a lot of us are on Twitter. And I do try to find I try to follow any people in the industry that I can if I come across them. And I think that not only is it good for you to kind of make that contact, but it also almost like keeps tabs on different places. If you knew that you really like this person and they were an assistant somewhere and they go to be a head somewhere, and if you see that job open up, like, you already know you like to work, you kind of like the work they do, maybe you like to work under them. I think that that's a really good way to make that connection. And I'd also say, if you have the ability to do some of the freelancing work, I know that I'm pretty proficient in NLS and some Stack Crew stuff. And if there are universities around us that are looking for help, I try to help them. I met people at Illinois State because of it, and they were looking for somebody to hop on stats one night for basketball, and I was available, and I've made good connections there since. I've helped out at University of Chicago prior to Colin getting there with just helping tournaments over Thanksgiving break. I'm from the Chicago suburbs. There's a lot of universities there that are kind of, they can be looking for help, and you just make those connections. And then when I've had the ability to travel with some of my sports, I always make sure to introduce myself to any SIDs there. And that's just a good way to make face-to-face contact with them, let you know who they are, and if they need to get your attention, they know who to come to. And it also is just like that connection you make right there, and just being friendly, it goes a long way in the industry.
Yeah, some great advice. I realized I wasn't following Cole just during this chat, so I followed him just on Twitter right now. So, but anyways, I mean, trying to get into committees as well, I feel like that's where I really started to feel comfortable in this field. Was obviously you have interactions with your conference SIDs or SIDs in the same area as you, but having those chats, getting together every month or every other month and working on projects together and spitballing ideas. I know, like, being on the CSU committee, like, we're coming up with topics for webinars just like this one, and being able to talk about that and really kind of feel like what other people's concerns are, what do we feel like other people need to be educated on. And then you get to meet people at the conventions, and like Meredith said, introducing yourself to people that you might have just met online, or you might have just met based on you being at that school. And I know there's, based on other webinars that we do, there's people that I've followed on Twitter, on X, and you know, I've been in contact with them ever since. So it's always network. I feel like this is what really makes the athletic communications community unique, is that everyone's always willing to talk and friendly and help out. And any way you can kind of foster those relationships, I think, is key. So let's move into just one of the last planned topics of the call. And, you know, so you've gotten offered the position, you're ready to go, the offer letter's in front of you, all you have to do is say yes or no. How do you know if what you've been offered is a good fit? You've weighed everything, you've talked to people, you've had several rounds of interviews. How do you know if it's time to pull the trigger or not? You know, Shelby, when you went to the Missouri Valley, what kind of allowed you to say, hey, this is the spot for me, not, you know, just based on location, but based on what the job offered you or where it might take you professionally?
That's a really great question. I think you just, when you know, like, I know that seems so simple, but such a complex decision to leave an institution, leave an organization, step out, you know, in faith that like this could be the fit. If it seems stressful, it probably is not a good move. If it seems natural, whether it's fit, location, people you'll be working with, it's probably the right move. And I know that seems so like broad. So how do you know? I would just say, for me, knowing the Missouri Valley Conference, like, I kind of have a unique story. When I was an undergraduate student at a university in St. Louis, I was an intern with the Missouri Valley Conference. My junior year, I had transferred in to Maryville University with zero volunteer experience, and the Valley had an opportunity to be an intern, and it was between me and one other kid. The other kid got it, but they told me, hey, if you want to volunteer at our basketball tournaments, the internship's yours your senior year. I said, sign me up, I need an internship to graduate. In the meantime, though, I had picked up another internship, I had volunteered. Fast forward, I'm this marketing intern my senior year, and then a media relations assistant had quit in January, which was 2 months before the tournament started. And back to not being afraid to fail, my now boss was my boss then, and he said, hey, do you want to try this communications thing as a part of your internship? And I said, sure. I was like, I don't know what I'm doing, but yeah, like, I'd be willing to give it a shot. And then I loved it so much. I haven't left the field since. And so fast forward 9 years, I get brought in as the assistant commissioner of communications. And so how did I know it was right? I was looking for a place to be closer to home, and I wasn't even looking for a place. I'll just rewind. They had reached out to me, presented me with the opportunity, and it was just too good to be true. I was getting closer to home. It was a great step in my professional career. And really for me, it was working with people that I loved, that gave me an opportunity when I was 21, 20 years old with zero experience. So long-winded answer, but short answer to all of that is you're going to know what the right opportunity is when it presents itself.
Feel free to ask some more questions in the Q&A, but Cole, Meredith, I'll allow you to answer this too. You know, Cole, what made you feel like it was the right place to be when you got to Palm Beach?
So there are several different things. You know, like we talked about, like I knew what I kind of wanted. I wanted, you know, first of all, a full-time job coming off an internship. I wanted to, you know, kind of stay towards the East Coast-ish. And I think at the time I still wanted that kind of small school vibe. And then the funny part is, so I interned in the same conference as PBA the year before I got hired. I was at Embry-Riddle, which was an amazing experience. Loved it there. Didn't want to leave, but they had to push me aside once the year was over. But I got reached out to by my eventual boss at PBA. He saw my resume on the CSC resume posting. And asked if I was interested. And I said, absolutely. And the only thing I knew is that they were in the conference and that they were in West Palm. But then doing my research, realized that PBA is also a faith-based institution, which I went to a faith-based college. I went to, you know, kindergarten through 12th, you know, small Christian private school. And that was an environment that I, you know, loved. So learning that about PBA made me like even more excited for the job, because I can kind of go, you know, to this environment that I'm familiar with people that are passionate about similar things as me. And then as I was having conversations with them, it was evident that like, this is going to be a perfect fit. You know, I'm already in Florida. I can drive right down the road. So that's great. There's a university that, you know, fits kind of what I kind of value. The big thing for me was also professional development, which my boss, who's now our associate AD now, told me when he hired me, like, hey, you're going to come be my assistant SID. I'm not trying to be an SID in 2 years. So if everything goes well, you're going to be able to move up. And I'm like, sounds great to me. So it really checked kind of all those things. And it really just felt right. So kind of like Shelby said, when you know, you know, you shouldn't have to force it. I feel like if you're forcing it, then it's probably not right.
Meredith, as a GA, I know that's obviously something, your GA terms are always limited to, you know, 1 or 2 years. You know, what are you looking for when you got to Illinois Wesleyan, or what are you looking for in the future?
When I was looking at Illinois Wesleyan, I kind of said earlier, I knew I wanted to get my master's, and there's nothing better than getting your master's paid for. So I'm getting a free education out of it at the end of the day. And I got an actuarial science degree in college, and I always kind of knew that I wasn't really meant for like that 8-to-5 life, 8-to-4 life of sitting at a desk and just looking at Excel sheets all day in some ways. And I got involved in the office as a student athlete, and then I just never really left his side. I kind of made him teach me things, and he just kind of had to deal with it at some points. And in this industry, there's kind of an old school SID and a new school SID, and hopefully you find like a little bit of hybrid. He's an old school SID, and he'll tell you that. And He just showed me his ways and kind of brought me out throughout the career, and really just taught me how to just be better. And I kind of knew that I wanted to go someplace that was similar to, in some ways similar to him, but also was going to help me like be better at different skills in life. And he kind of looked at me and said, you know, you can go anywhere for 2 years. And as a grad assistant, you know, you have the ability to test this field for 2 years. And I really liked it, and I plan on continuing it, but it's something that I kind of look at my values and talked about it earlier, and what kind of checks the box. And when you know, you know. And I knew coming to Wesleyan was closer to home, but also far enough away that my parents weren't right down the street, so I had to do stuff on my own. But I was also a car ride away if anything was needed. And what I'm looking for later is kind of just a place where I can grow and I can thrive and also just not be kind of thrown into anything way too quickly. I remember when I was looking at some grad assistant positions, one of the questions I was asked at university was, if I were to leave right now and you took this job, what would you do? And that was kind of almost a red flag in my eyes, because I was like, I really don't know anything about this field and I don't think that I could be in a position to be an SID and at 22 years old at that time. So I knew that that was not a fit where I wanted to be. And I think I lucked out on that where I am now. But yeah, it's like almost like when you know, and when you don't, and don't force it. If you kind of have this pit in your stomach about it and you just don't know, like, don't think you have to accept the first offer on your table. We can all tell you right now, there's a lot of openings in the field. You just kind of have to be open to those openings and don't be afraid to just test the water. And you can go to an interview and you don't really know a place until you go to an interview, and you just don't know if it's going to be a great fit until then. And you don't know if it's not going to be a great fit until you go there. And just don't be afraid to do anything.
That was so good. So good.
So we got time for just a couple more questions. There's kind of two questions that almost they pair, they dovetail with each other. You know, someone is asking, can they get a job without going the GA route? Or is that something that they really need to? And then another one person's asking, do you need a master's degree when you're looking to move up the SID chain? Myself, I didn't go the GA route. I went directly into the field and worked on my master's later. And that's one avenue, but GAs, I feel like that's one, as Meredith said, as everyone kind of said, it's an easy way to get your graduate work paid for. It's not cheap. It allows you to grab 2 years of pretty much full-time experience that really prepares you to poo, but I don't really think you need to. There's definitely avenues and opportunities to go elsewhere, but you guys have any other thoughts on that one?
I was just going to say, back in the day when I was graduating, it was when, and I don't remember specifics, but it was basically like Obama was in office and he had made a comment that bachelor's degrees were going to be looking like associate's degrees. So that terrified me. I was like, I need to get a master's because in 10 years, everybody's going to want a master's. I can tell you, nobody really cares, which sounds bad, but, and I'm sure Meredith could attest to this and anybody else, but it was 2 years of free education after going to a very expensive school with very limited grants. And it was 2 years of really good experience. Like I, for somebody who had transferred into a program late, had zero experience, had just tried this communications thing 6 months before, I didn't think I had another option. Now, if you've been a student worker in an office for 3 or 4 years, you've probably got way more experience than a lot of the GAs out there have. So definitely case by case basis. I've been in offices where everybody had a master's. I've been in other offices where nobody had a master's except me. But it's really dependent on the school. You probably won't use a whole lot, but the experience is what is super valuable. So it just kind of depends on that. I don't know if Cole or Meredith have anything else on that.
In terms of like, if you need a master's to, you know, kind of move forward in the field, I mean, I have my master's, but in terms of my experience, everything that main thing that everyone looks at is experience. That's really all it comes down to. I think most people aren't really worried about your degree or what you have it in. But it's really, what have you done? And what can you do when you're here, is really the most important thing. And if you want to avoid that GA route because you don't want classes or, you know, a lot of GA positions are a 2-year commitment. If you're looking for a shorter commitment, the intern route is, like I said, something I did. So I didn't do the GA thing, but I did a 1-year internship at Embry-Riddle, and it was the best year of my life. I worked in an awesome office, got some great experience. And like I said, it was a 1-year commitment. So I was able to peace out after 1 year and go get a full-time job.
Yeah, I think it goes back to just like where you see fit. And I always kind of tell people when I'm looking at, people have asked me since I basically took this job 2 years ago now, if what's next and where do you see yourself next and where do you want to go? And I always kind of tell them it's very similar to teaching, since a lot of people know more about teaching than they do about SID positions. It's very similar to teaching. You don't know it's open until it's actually open. You can have all these dream schools in your mind, but the job's not open. The job's not going to be there. And I just, when I was applying, the grad assistants were a little more prominent than the assistant positions at that moment. And so I just, that's kind of the route that I went, but I wasn't just looking at, I guess, the grad assistant positions. I had applied for a couple other assistant positions that locationally were appealing to me. And I had a couple interviews there in some ways, but so, I mean, obviously I was getting looked at with just a bachelor's degree. And I think that it is the experience. I did have 3 years of working in an office, and I probably would have found some place eventually if without getting my master's, but I don't know if it would have been the best fit for me. And I think it just goes back to that. It's kind of wherever you see fit. And if it means going to class, it means going to class. Some GA positions are 1 year, mine's two. And I really don't ever feel like I'm actually a grad student, I guess. I always just feel like I'm a full-time, my boss would tell you this, I'm a full-time assistant that has to go to class every once in a while. And I don't know if that's how it is any other GA positions, but I'll take a master's to have 2 years of full-time experience.
Awesome. Yeah, we had kind of a follow-up question, and I think we can just field this real quick. You know, do you need a master's to move up to the athletic department, maybe to become an associate AD for external communications, which I don't necessarily think you do. I know other people that don't, but when it comes to becoming an athletic director, that's a little bit different. They usually require a master's degree or some sort of advanced education. But again, that's kind of a case by case basis. And if you're out of school for years and you work your way up the ladder, that's something that you might not necessarily need. So again, a case by case basis, get that experience however you can. And if that's something that's important to you, you know, feel free to go out for it and always be looking at job postings. They're always putting in the qualifications that you need to kind of qualify for the job. So as we're coming down to the last few minutes, any final thoughts? We can go around the table real quick, Shelby.
Yeah, I think my biggest words of encouragement are, it just goes back to not being afraid to fail. Like, I think back to, people won't believe this, I used to be very introverted. I'm not very introverted. But working in communications forced me to be an extrovert. And, you know, would I be able to network easier maybe than others, or put myself out there more, or do anything without this experience? Probably not. But if I was afraid of what others thought of me, afraid of failing, afraid of asking silly questions, I wouldn't be able to get the experience I've had. So final thoughts are just don't be afraid.
And kind of bouncing off of that, don't be discouraged if you apply to a few places and you don't hear anything or you don't land the job. Keep trying. You know, eventually you'll find the right fit. There's no shame in applying to a bunch of jobs and, you know, only hearing back from one or two. That's similar situation I was in 5 years ago, to be honest. And it's a very competitive field. I mean, there's tons of people applying for those positions. So it's hard to land things, but, you know, it makes it more worth it when you do.
Yeah, definitely the don't be afraid to fail and don't be discouraged. My first 2 weeks were very much of a roller coaster here, and I'm really glad I didn't give up in those 2 weeks. And it's worked its way out, and I wasn't afraid to fail after that. And I was comfortable being in uncomfortable situations, and really just like envision yourself where do you see yourself? And that might change year to year, that might change month to month, but kind of have that picture of where you see yourself. And when you're interviewing places, picture to see if you can see yourself there with those people and thriving in that position.
Yeah, as far as, you know, doing the interview process, whether it's Zoom, whether it's in person, I feel like it's a lost art form to kind of send a thank you note just for their time. Interviewing, having been through myself, having been on both ends, it takes a lot of time to sift through applications and go through the phone interviews and Zoom interviews and in-person stuff. Reaching out, saying thank you for your time, you know, I appreciate being able to talk to you about the position, everything like that can go a long way. That shows that, again, that just like asking questions during the interview shows that you're interested, that you care about the position, and that you respect and value their time as much as they respected and value yours. But I'm going to spring a bonus question on you guys. I got it right in on the buzzer. So we did final thoughts. We'll do this one quick question, which does come up every now and then. I feel like I've been through interviews where they haven't required this and interviews where they have. Writing samples, which can be huge in our job, especially in one person shops where you're doing all the press releases, everything like that. You know, what's the best way of providing them? Is it just through email? Is it bringing copies to the interview? And what is there a certain way employers would really like to receive those?
I say wait until they ask. I would say when I first started interviewing places, I brought hard copies of resumes and writing samples and graphic design examples, and nobody asked for anything. So I went home with everything. So wait until they ask. Usually it's going to be done via email. I will say if you plan to meet with coaches, probably have a couple hard copies of things on hand. But I can tell you your resume has probably already been passed around.
Yeah, I agree with that. In my process, if I want them, then I'll ask for them via email. You can just send me links. That's fine.
Yeah, I haven't been asked for any writing samples, but I just kind of wait it out. And if they ask for it, then kind of just always kind of know what pieces that you've written or taken photos of or any graphic design, kind of have that vault. We kind of always keep like a portfolio. Like if I have a piece that I know I really liked and I really enjoyed doing, that I kind of just make sure I save it and I know exactly where it is. So when I need it in the future, I can just find it pretty quickly and send it out.
Meredith, Cole, Shelby, a huge thank you for being present today and giving your insights on the profession and how to start out as a profession or professional in this job field. You know, you have to start somewhere. So really appreciate your guys' time, especially during a busy season where postseason play is getting ready to go for the last season of the school year before we all kind of get a little bit of respite going into the summer. Again, the webinar will be on demand tomorrow in video format and also on a podcast on your platform of choice. So share that information with your colleagues as you move forward. We encourage you to check out our website, collegesportscommunicators.com, for updated information on what's on tap for CSC programming and continuing education and the job board, which I feel is a very topical thing for this discussion. Job board on CSC is a pivotal thing in your search. I remember for the CSCU committee is presenting our two-day CSCU Summit, formerly known as the CSCU Camp, this June 4th and 5th, with four sessions tailored to young professionals and those emerging professionals on the in and outs of working in athletic communications. More to come on that free summit. So stay tuned for those details and more topics to be announced. Again, Meredith, Cole, Shelby, thank you for joining us tonight. Really appreciate your guys' time.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks, guys. Have a great night.